We're good.
That's what I was trying to find out.
Thank you for that note. That was nice.
Wish we would have prevailed.
Yeah, it went nice.
Yeah.
The pillow.
No, yeah, that was good.
Okay.
Very good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Not a lot. No, I'm just trying to done around here. Well, I don't mind that.
2162.
Okay, that's the first one. What opened the door for you is the fact that you didn't come.
No, I think that.
In the interest of time.
Just you can sit here. You can sit here and share.
Oh, okay, that's right. That's right. We're having a deal at 5:30 for him over on the 494. So. Why not?
It's okay.
The Senate Committee on Transportation will come to order. First on the agenda, and members, just so you know, and to the audience, we're going to hop around a little bit to make allowances for people's schedules. First up is Senate File 1193. Senator Johnson, it's my understanding that you have an amendment for this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 1193 is a department technical bill regulating the coating on the petroleum fuels, and I'm offering the A4 amendment just to bring the new changes in the coating up to where we need them to be.
Okay, and since this is the bill's first stop, author's amendment is in order.
Mr. Chair, this is the third.
Oh, this is the third. Well, in that case, Senator Bonhoff would move the A4 amendment on that motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Johnson, there's one word change in here,
yes,
that needs to be made.
Mr. Chairman, there's also the word on line 1.11, the word penalty. A long time ago on the first stop, there was a penalty in the bill, and we've taken it out. So we need to take the word penalty out.
It's not in the amendment, it's in the bill.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, well then Senator Bonhoff would move that motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed. Motion does prevail. Senator Johnson.
That's the bill, Mr. Chair. And I do have Mark Bocelli from the department if you want to hear from him. Otherwise, this is our third stop and the work's been done and agreed to.
Okay, well maybe you can just give us a quick overview of what we're doing here. Good enough. Senator Bonhoff would move that Senate File 1193 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed. Motion does prevail. Thank you.
Thank you.
One down, 17 to go.
All right.
Next up we have Senator Coring. And Senator Scogin. This is Senate File 1887. This is the Dallas Sands Memorial Highway designation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. What I want to do with this is, a lot of us have served with Senator Dallas Sams, and I think it's important that we recognize people that have really contributed to the state of Minnesota. You know, if you look around, there's a few kind of obscure places in this building. You'll see a portrait of Senator Gordon Rosenmeyer, who I actually am serving in his Senate district. He was very instrumental in getting a lot of good things done for the state of Minnesota, and so he's recognized for his contributions, and I think it's important that we recognize Senator Dallas Sams for the contributions that he made to this state and was taken away at a very early age. And so Senator Scogin and I and Senator Day and Senator Metzen are authors of a bill that would designate Highway 210 from the city of Motley to the city of Staples. It's about 7 or 8 miles or so there that would designate that the Dallas Sams Memorial Highway. And Mr. Chairman, I was just looking at the bill. My intention is I want this to be have the signage there so that people recognize Senator Sams for the work that he's did. But I don't want to, and I don't know what the committee has to do, I don't want to have it so that people that live on there have to change their addresses. I don't think they'd have to with this bill, but I guess that would be a question that I have to the chair. I don't want to have those people have to have all their addresses changed.
Well, Senator Coring, when we've done bills like this to rename highways, we're not changing the designation of the trunk highway. We're just honoring Senator Sams, and there will be a sign that says so. So nobody's address is going to change.
Okay.
And you do realize that under Section 161-139 that the state is not going to pay for the replication of the signs. That'll have to be an effort that comes from the community to pay for the cost of making the signs.
You know what? That's fine. Mm-hmm. I would turn it over to my Senate colleague, Senator Scogin. And then, Mr. Chairman, if Chris would come forward, I've got a picture that I'd like to have passed out to the committee to look at. So,
okay. Senator Scogin.
He was a chief author sponsoring COLAs for nursing home employees, insisting that the money be used for the employees and not administration. Chief authored numerous bills for watershed districts. He sponsored legislation funding for volunteer ambulance recruitment and retention. Chief authored legislation providing tax exemption for ambulance equipment. Senator Sams, along with Senator Gill, made huge changes in feedlot rules to make them livable. He created the Minnesota Agricultural Leadership Council, chief authored legislation for mental health assistance for Minnesota family farmers, and started the program for Northern Connections, a program that helps train individuals for better employment transitions from welfare to work. A small part of what Senator Dallas Sams did while he served here in the Senate. I think it's only fitting that the people in his district will be remembering him with the signage along Highway 210 from Staples to Montana.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Kunst, I would like to have him give a few remarks.
Hi, my name is Dave Kunst. I was a friend of Dallas Sams. I came to the state of Minnesota in 1989, November of that year, and Dallas was running for election in 1990, and one of the first people I met in politics. And I was intrigued by his enthusiasm, his charm, his smile, his quick wit, and his drive to win the election. I think each of you probably, if you knew him, called him a friend. I hope you would. He would call you a friend. He believed in working both sides of the aisle. And he worked on one of my big issues is the old eye drop wars that we had in the 90s between optometry and ophthalmology, and I hope nobody ever has to go through that again. But Dallas was part of that and learned a lot about the legislative process during those years. And we became friends, and what was remarkable is the number of trips I ended up making to his district to see the work he did for people of all status of life in his district and then throughout the state. And I can't think of a school district, Board of Supervisors, Environment, Natural Resource Districts, you name it, Educational Service Units, VOTEC Schools. He was always pointing out how somebody had a little problem that he wanted to handle. And he followed through. And then when he became in charge of a major budget area, it was fun that year to watch him kind of pull all the areas of departments and the laws that he wanted to work on some more for the benefit of the state. And he was successful in that. I'm just sorry that his life was short, but we'll always remember him as 54 years old. And I want to close by saying I know he would say, with this award that you're giving him, he would say, "Can you believe it? Can you believe it?" Just a little old milk and farmer from Staples, Minnesota. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dallas Chair. Sands was truly a unique individual, a very humble man, and a friend to everybody in this room. So, Senator Coring, or Senator Debel, I'm sorry.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I had the pleasure of serving as Senator Sam's vice chair for my first 4 years, and I got quite a lesson in. I forgot until Mr. Coons just mentioned. He shifted that chapter two of the optometry ophthalmologist wars to me. That was, which I wouldn't want to repeat, but it's a great experience for a freshman to go through those scope of practice wars. I forgot Dallas did that to me. But it was great. It was great being his friend. And one, I think this is a great bill, and I thank Senator Coring for bringing it forward. One thing you appreciate. When you go up to visit someone where they live, and we certainly appreciated it at his funeral, was, you know, how much he was of the place that he came from. We had the funeral in the same gymnasium where he graduated from high school, so it'll be great that his name will be up there on that highway forevermore. So that's really fantastic. I'd like to move the bill when the time is appropriate, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Senator Debel moves that Senate File 1887 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Senate floor and placed on the consent calendar. Any further testimony? All in favor of that motion, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thanks,
Chairman. Thank the committee.
Thank you. Is Senator Neville here? Senator Wergen, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Wergen, do you have two bills here today?
I do.
Okay.
I'm going to make them both really quick.
All right, let's start with 1365.
Mr. Chair, Senate File 1365 addresses a problem that's been around for as long as we've basically had to plan for building highways and stuff like that. We all know that MnDOT, well, goodness, I have everything except the bill itself, but we can make that work. Oh, here it is. We all know that MnDOT has to plan well in advance for highways and things like that. That's a good thing to do, but it creates a predicament. As soon as there's a map drawn and that map passes right over top of somebody's farm or right over top of somebody's house, they begin to wonder what they can do about their property. And I'll give you a current example so that you know where this comes from. Big Lake, Minnesota's population has absolutely grown. It's one of the fastest growing spots in Minnesota and actually, as a matter of fact, in the nation. And so the growth, the Highway 10 goes right down through the middle of town. And it has created a problem in that there's no room to build Highway 10 any wider right through town, so it has to go around. So on the MnDOT map, there is a Big Lake bypass for Highway 10. Well, that goes over several people's land, and actually between the old highway and the proposed new highway, there's one really nice farmstead that they know they won't be there, and they'd like to sell some of their land because they're ready to retire. And they're in this predicament where everybody looks at the MnDOT map and sees a new highway going right through the land they're thinking about buying, and it doesn't work very well for anybody. So what I'm attempting to do is start the conversation. And I want to emphasize that. I'm trying to start the conversation. And Senator Day said something when I first started here, and I think he had a really good point. He said, sometimes you got to launch a grenade in the tunnel and see where the dust lands. He did, and I like that.
Is that putting – that's the same type of analogy as putting the helmet on the kamikaze pilot.
Yeah.
He's full of them.
Yeah. And then Senator Bach in the Tax Committee, and he inspired this somewhat too. He said, you know, unless we put a bill on the table, nobody's going to talk about it and try and fix it. They're all just going to say this, say that, say the other thing. So this bill says, okay, we've identified in a design, in a planning phase, that there's going to be a new highway. It's going to cross through this land. It's going to have an impact on the landowner. And the second half of the bill proposes how that landowner can be taken care of until such a time as that land comes through, by addressing the fact that the assessor has to freeze a value and that the taxes they pay have to go down over a period of time to only 50% of what they're paying now, and that they don't pay capital gains on the property when it's sold because they can't get as much for it as soon as it's on a MnDOT map. And like I said, Mr. Chair, this is a starting point, and I'm hoping that by tossing this out there, I know MnDOT has some concerns. I know the counties have some concerns. I'm hoping they'll come up here and say a few words about the things that concern them, but a whole lot more than that, I'm hoping that they'll come to my office and talk about it, because it's one of those things, if you can't get help to fix it, I'll just do it the way I think is right. So if we can hear from them, if they're here, that would be great.
Ms. Parker, do you wish to speak?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. I just want to say that I did very briefly talk to Senator Wergen last week, and we really do understand that people are sometimes put in a terrible position when their land happens to be the place where where it's identified to be a future location for a highway, a new highway, or an expansion. And we really do understand that people have life issues around some of these things. And so we would be very happy to work with her, and I've promised that we would be more than willing to convene meetings to sit down with landowners, especially over the summer when there's a little more time to sort of explore things and see what else we can do. The other thing we could do probably is maybe for a model, although I know this hasn't been well accepted because it's got a cost to it, is to look at the Rolf program in the metro area, where once land is officially mapped for a highway, the Met Council, if it has money in its fund, is able to advance money to buy that land, which then relieves the landowner of the burden of holding land that they feel they can't sell because it's marked or mapped for a highway. And so that's all I really want to say, but I would just like to have Bob Brown, who's the director of our Office of Land Management, just briefly identify a couple issues, just so you know what they are. Mm-hmm. But I do want to assure you that we're very happy to work with Senator Wergen on this.
And Mr. Chair, while Mr. Brown is getting seated, I'd like to pay these folks out too, but I think we all know that our budget doesn't give us the amount of money we need to pay these folks out once it's identified. So I think we need to find a real solution that holds them harmless at the very least.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Brown. Mm-hmm. Mr. Brown, can you state your name for the tape, please? Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. And I think that's what Senator Wergen was looking for, is to start the process. So here's what I would recommend. We'll put this bill on the table and let Senator Wergen and Mr. Brown, Ms. Parker work and see if they can't find a resolution here in the next few weeks. And if so, we'll slide that resolution into our omnibus bill.
And Mr. Chair, I hope the cities and the counties come and see me too, because this mm-hmm. bill does have tax implications, but it also has huge planning implications mm-hmm. for the cities and counties, so they need to be a part of that.
Okay. Well, I think that there's representatives here I see from the cities, and I'm sure there's here from the counties, yep. So you folks all get together with Senator Wergen and work this out, if you would. So with that, Senator Koch would move to lay the bill on the table. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you. Senator Wergen, your next bill is 1148.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate file 1148 is very simple and short. I apologize that I don't have any testifiers here. This bill has been scheduled so many times, and my testifiers have driven 75 miles down here twice. And the committee was canceled in the House the first time and canceled here, and no one could help that. So I chose not to ask them to drive down here again. It's pretty straightforward. In statute right now, no one can wear a double headset. In other words, you can have a plug in one ear, but you can't cover both ears. The ambulance drivers are finding that in to communicate from the front of the ambulance to the back and going down the road with noise and siren and stuff like that, there are times when they simply need to have the headset so they can hear each other, communicate in critical situations. So they're asking that EMS providers be able to wear headsets when they're operating an emergency services vehicle. And Mr. Chair, Mr. Buck McAlpin and Mr. O.J. Doyle have also offered their full support, but I don't think they were able to be here today either. So,
yes, and they've talked with me, and I'm sure they've talked with a lot of the committee members. Is there anybody here that wants to testify against this bill? Seeing none, then Senator Koch moves that Senate File 1148 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You, Senator Wergen. Is Senator Neville here? Okay. Well, in that case, we're going to take...
Senate File 1923, Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Blanchard is here today to provide a little testimony on exactly what's happened with a piece of property that he owns, but I'll kind of walk through the bill quickly. This is just an extinguishment of interest in Town Road. And it's going to change some notice requirements by which the town board, by resolution, can extinguish a town interest in a road. It also nullifies an extinguishment of a town interest in a road if the interest is recorded or filed with the county auditor and not with the county recorder. And that's basically the bill. I'll let Mr. Blanchard kind of walk the committee through some of the reason why this bill is here.
Good evening, and thank you for letting me attend. My name is James Blanchard. I live in Lakeville. I own a 40-acre parcel of land east of Moose Lake. The property was bought by my grandfather in 1930. It was a farm at that time. I stayed in the farmhouse, and in recent years it's been used as recreational property. In about 2004, I went to go to my property and found the road was barricaded. The fellow who lived there came out and said the road was no longer a road. It had been extinguished. How can you do that one? I didn't hear anything about it, had no notice, no ability to speak. Well, that's what it is. So I made a number of trips to Carlton County, to the county offices, and have learned a lot more about what it takes to close a road and open a road than I ever wanted to know. What had happened is there was a property owner at the end of the road who was trying to get a building permit to build a building too close to the township road. His permit was denied by the county. The solution to the problem was to extinguish the road, therefore eliminating the need for the permit. I went to the township board and said, how can you do this? They did. The extinguishment took place in, I believe it was 2002. The road originally had been created, and the document used is a surveyor's road order. In the days when it was created as a road, that document was supposed to be kept at the auditor's office. The present law states that you should look for it at the recorder's office. I have found out that the Carlton County attorney back in 2001 took the position that the documents stored at the auditor's office or the recorder's office were both valid, because the law changed as far as where the document was supposed to be kept. The other tenets in abolishing the road was that there was no road order, that no fee had been paid, and no work was done on the road. Well, the road order existed. There was a fee collected. There have been four culverts replaced on the road, and the state, through their state aid program, working with the Moose Lake Snowmobile Club, built a steel frame bridge 60 feet long and 16 feet wide across a creek that runs through my property. So I believe that the road was properly built. The documents were properly filed. There has been work done on the road. And as I say, I received no notice. I didn't have my day in court, if you will. The solution that they offered was a cartway. And I've checked into that, and I don't have an exact bid, but I was told that my cost would be $5,000 to $7,000 to get a cartway to the property. I tried doing it by easement, but of the four people who own property that abut mine, two would be willing to give him an easement, one will not, and the other is unknown. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
Yeah, so Mr. Chairman, basically what this bill would do would give Mr. Blanchard access to his property by establishing that cartway, and it would be at the expense of the township. Now, I think that most of us that live in greater Minnesota have had constituents that have had issues like this, and it comes down to An individual like Mr. Blanchard in this case has 40 acres or so of property, and it becomes landlocked, and they don't have access to their own property. And I just feel that, if somebody owns property, there should be a way to have access. Now, there was a, in this particular case, it was, that road was established, and it was recorded in the auditor's office. But, when we made those law changes back in the 70s, nobody knew about it. So it kind of fell into a gray area, and we're trying to provide Mr. Blanchard and several others around the state access to their property with this bill. I know that there is some opposition to the bill, and we should probably have them come up and testify also.
Senator Murphy and Mr. Blanchard, and I can't think of it off the top of my head, but I've been involved with some vacations of road easements. And it occurs to me that there's something on the books in terms of state law that does not allow the vacation of an easement in the event it creates a landlocked parcel.
Correct.
So I am having a problem figuring out how somebody could do that without the notice and creating a landlocked parcel.
Well, if I may respond to that, I addressed that with the township board with their attorney present, and he assured me that what they did was correct. They couldn't find the document and so on and so forth. Well, in the letter that he wrote a year before the road was extinguished, he referenced the road order, where it was kept, and the fact that the county attorney had ruled that it was a legal document no matter where it resided. So I thought it was rather funny that they used the road order to base the extinguishment. They used the description, actually the road order, to extinguish the road. No, sorry.
Case law says that if you've got a road order that has not been properly validated with the county recorder's office, not the auditor's office, or otherwise perfected, the township has no legal claim to that road. And any attempt to exert a legal claim to that road would amount to a constitutional taking of private property. So what happened was, as Mr. Blanchard indicated, another landowner was in the process of putting up a pole barn garage structure formed by the county. A, he didn't have a proper building permit, and B, to get the building permit, he needed a variance because he was close to his road, which came as a surprise to him because he knew nothing about a road going across the property. He contacted the town board. The town board said, you do not maintain a road across that property. And so they consulted their attorney and did what was legally proper. They had no ability to claim a road, legal ability. The road order of 1920, the clerks have said, no other documentation, there's no way to sustain that. as a road. The guy who wanted his building permit was sued for a taking. So they passed the resolution. The resolution was adopted September 10th, 2001, saying we have no record of this being a legal town road. Yes, there's this road order from 1920, but we can't count that because there's nothing else to protect the interest. We hereby extinguish any claim that may have existed for this road. We never perfected it. It's not ours. We can't claim it now. It's hereby extinguished. That's what we gave the gentleman who needed his building permit the ability to proceed with his construction. And so what would happen with this bill, first of all, it would undo it, and actually as drafted, it would create a town road. It wouldn't create a cartway. We have worked on the house side. I was in Toledo language. I know that Senator Murphy did not have that language today that would address some of that issue. But it doesn't. It would undo these actions, put them back into this gray area, saying, well, okay, there's a cartway now established, but who compensates the landowners whose property is now subject to this cartway if the state decrees as a cartway? It's still a potential constitutional takings argument that the township, contrary to the appearance, yes, there's a 1920 action that nothing else ever followed up on. So today's taxpayer, today's town board member would be punished for something that happened 90 years ago and they had no control over, and now you're looking at a constitutional takings claim. So it is a little more complex than would appear on the surface.
Well, I'm having a little problem here, having worked in real estate for many years. If you could say, in order to, in 2001, extinguish the road, there has to be a record that it was there, and people must have been using it. So you're into a lot of real estate law. If people were traveling over that road for many years, it appears that you would create an easement under adverse possession or some other potentials.
Extinguish what, if anything, ever existed because we can't sustain it. If they had tried to lay claim to that road today, the other property owner would say, prove it. There's no way the township could prove it as a road under existing case law, existing statutes, and they would have been sued for the taking. And so that's why we do have these gray areas. It's unfortunate results, but that's the way the law is. I could not advise the town board, the town attorney could not advise the town board to argue it as a road, because that's the way the law is set up. If the legislature decides to modify the process in some way and say, well, we are creating this automatic right to a cartway, then the issue still becomes, back in the mid-80s, there was a process where the legislature gave us authority to record roads with a simplified approach. A number of townships relied on that statute and said, okay, we think we have this road, so we're recording it. They were sued for a taking. First of the legislature can do what you want. It doesn't supersede the Constitution. If you're going to claim that road, you've got to pay for that road, compensate for the road. And here the township is saying, in 1920, there may have been some intent to put a road in. It was never followed up on by the township. There may have been some other action. As far as people having used it, such as Mr. Blanchard, they in fact may have and most likely would have a right to a prescriptive easement because they have used it for more than 15 years under the adverse possession law. But that is a private cause of action saying I, as a private individual, have a right to be there. It's not something the township can do on behalf of the user. I will let the committee know that I received a fax this morning, and I think there's some disagreement as to in writing now that they are willing and happy to work with Mr. Blanchard to provide him a personal easement in recognition that there is no public access there. They're happy to work with him and provide him that private access, which would render this this situation moot. And I hope you proceed with that action, because I think it's the safer recourse as opposed to retroactively undoing past actions, something this legislature normally does not like to do, and setting up not only just in this case, potentially statewide challenges, because the state's now saying there's something publicly created, there's not been compensation for.
Senator Murphy, I just would comment that I'm definitely on your side of this issue. If you can get some assurances from Mr. Blanchard, we maybe would not need to change the law, but it occurs to me that the township, in effect, created the problem in 2001. I had just gone through a vacation of a road 2 years ago in a township, in a road that never was driven on, that was planned back in the 1920s, and the township was smart enough to use the vacation process because it could have potentially created a landlocked parcel. So I don't know the legalese, but it just occurs from what you've said that this was legalese in order to avoid a process on something that was being used as a road. So it's kind of an interesting concept.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question is the idea of being used as a road. It was being used not by the general public as a road. In the testimony provided by the township, the hearing that they had, it was being used by, at most, in the case of property owners, more as a driveway or as a recreational setting, not as road. And for everything, there are distinctions that are there. So the township in 2001 did the legal option they had, which was to say, we don't know what will occur in 1920. None of us were here in 1920. But we've gone through our records. They've looked at 40 years worth of records. I think they're up to over 50 years worth of records last time I talked to the town attorney, saying there's absolutely nothing to show the township ever. Others may have done something with the road. Maybe it's a DNR road. Maybe it's a state road. But for the township to be saddled with it, the township did not create the original. The current town board did not create the problem that now appears. They follow the law that they are mandated to follow.
Well, Mr. Blanchard, I just again would tell you that I'm on your side, and as I know, there's thousands of these township roads that exist and maybe are not maintained by townships, so then maybe skirt the law and are mostly used as access for the property owners. So I would be inclined to be on Senator Murphy's side in figuring out some kind of language to remedy this, because I see nothing but future problems if people can actually create an issue where somebody has no access under the extinguishment. And again, since the township created the extinguishment, I would be inclined to believe the township created the problem, not Mr. Blanchard. And Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems to me that we're talking about this very specific case, and in fact, we are in a court of law, and so for us to say who was right, who was wrong, is not really the issue. The issue is the legislation that we have before us and a law going forward that would protect the interest of property owners. And it seems to me that this is a sound law to be looking at, and that, in fact, we do not want in any way, shape, or form property owners to be landlocked through some mistake, through some, you know, for whatever reason, and that's really why we're here. And so with regard to the actual legislation, I think that it there'd be no reason not to go forward with that, regardless of the outcome, whose fault, et cetera. I'm curious, as I read the legislation, I don't see where in this legislation it fixes things retroactively. I see how it's going to take care of the problem going forward. But Senator Murphy, could you help me understand how, if we pass this, it would actually...
Senator, if I may, it's Section 2 that says any extinguishment of the town interest is hereby nullified. And so it's that nullification that makes it retroactive. And again, I understand the sympathy, and none of my comments were intended to say simplifying the action or making it a road, or as we work on the house side, making it a cartway, which would definitely be a better resolution than a road, particularly for the needs being requested. There's still the issue of who compensates the landowner, what's the fair process for compensating the landowner subject to that cartway when there's something that the law has never legally acknowledged. So that's why it's a lot more complex than we would like it to be.
Well, I guess I'm still having problem, members, with trying to figure out that there was no problem until the township went through the extinguishment process. Mr. Blanchard appears to have had access until the township went through that process.
Mr. Chair, from my understanding, the reason it never really became an issue was at that previously there was no construction going on. There was no need for anybody to care about what this path was. And I'm the attorney, and I can only relay the information provided. The attorney who advised the township said that at the time of the vacation, people were not aware anybody was using it other than they were not aware of Mr. Blanchard having gone. I think I don't acknowledge that it's been very infrequently used. It hasn't been an issue because nobody was aware that others were going back there, other than the snowmobile trail dotted part of it, and there's disagreement on that as to where the access for the trail is going to be. There's actually disagreement on that, and I don't have firsthand knowledge of that, so I won't get into that part of it.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, here's what I think we should do. There were some amendments in the House that were made to this bill, and I think that would probably give the townships a little bit of comfort. Not a lot. I think that they're still going to be, leaning towards not supporting this type of legislation. But but here's what I think we ought to do. I think we ought to put this bill on the table right now. We'll take it up again next week. We'll put the amendments on that the House had. We'll get a better understanding about what those amendments are and how that's going to affect this case in particular. And my worry is if we go full throttle, full bore with this, that there's going to be plenty of disruption out there in our townships. And I don't know if that's exactly what that could be an unintended consequence that we don't want to happen. We also don't want to happen, we don't want Mr. Blanchard to keep being denied access to his own property. So I think we should put this bill on the table, fix it up a little bit next week, and then when we put our omnibus bill together, we'll put it in the omnibus bill.
So that's your motion, Senator Murphy?
That would be my motion.
Senator Murphy has a motion to put the bill on the table. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Is Senator Neville around?
He was
chairman.
Paging Senator Neville.
I'm here.
He may be just outside the door.
If somebody would stick their head out there and grab
side.
Him. Okay, great. Yes, Senator Neville, you have Senate File 1605.
Senator Neville.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. This is a short bill in size. It would create a provisional driver's license restrictions for during the first 1 year that a person had their driver's license. I patterned this bill, I believe, after maybe Senate Council called me. I think I sent it to you and said it's Oregon's law, isn't it? I think it's patterned after the Oregon law that's in place now. And in a nutshell, what it does is for the first 6 months that an individual has a provisional license, they can't drive between midnight and 5 in the morning unless they're going from their home or from their employment and their home, from a school event and home, or if they're driving for employment purposes, or if there's somebody who's 25 years or older in the car with them. In addition, for the first 6 months, they can't drive with anyone who is under 20 years old, unless it's a family member. Then for the second 6 months, they could not drive with more than three people in the car who are under 20, unless they're family members. So the purpose of the law is to give a time period when younger and more inexperienced drivers can become better drivers before they start taking other passengers along with them. And it's a bill that a policy that's been around multiple times before. I suspect that most of you have probably seen it at one time or another. So it's nothing new.
Thank you, Senator Neville. And I'm sure that, and I don't see the representatives here from AAA, but I'm sure that they would appreciate you bringing this bill to the committee. Members, we've tried to put restrictions on provisional driver's license. I believe what Senator Neville is doing here, we need to do this, basically, is the way I feel about it, because these are the drivers that are causing a disproportionately high amount of fatal crashes on our road. About 25% of all fatal crashes are people between 16 and 25. And they don't have enough experience to be out there on the road to begin with. And, you know, we're letting them drive around with a carload of kids. And, you know, we've all been there. So, Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair and Senator Neville, I support the intent. I have four kids between the ages of 22 and 16, so I'm right square in the middle of this age group. But I have a concern if we aren't doing something that might not be in their best interest, and that is particularly with my daughter. She doesn't like to be alone when it's dark. She prefers to have one other person in the car with her, and I'm concerned. And, for example, she's not comfortable with where she's going and she needs somebody to help her with directions. To say that they have to be alone in the car, I would, you know, I understand that you're doing it after the Oregon law, but I would just ask people to consider that, how, you know, just to have the discussion. Would one person not be something that might actually better serve the driver?
Senator Neville.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoeff, if the committee feels that's appropriate, that's fine with me, but I guess it's only for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then after the first 6 months, then you can have up to three people mm-hmm. who are under 20. So,
Senator Neville, I think you did that to avoid Senator Dill's double dating rule. Is that?
Well, I'm sure that I can think of a few scenarios too that would create some hardships. But for the first 6 months, the reason that I chose to sponsor this is I do think for the first 6 months, we recognize that just learning how to make parallel park and making left-hand turns and learning how to merge and yield and do all of those things takes a little bit of experience. And so in your daughter's case, during the daytime.
Well, Mr. Chair, and Senator Neville, in my daughter's case, she actually waited a year and a half after being 16. Oh, she was that okay. Nervous. So, you know, everybody's different, but.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that there will be some circumstances where it would be a hardship.
Mm-hmm. Senator Neville, it's my understanding that the companion bill in the House is not moving.
Actually, Mr. Chair, what happened is I thought my legislative assistant sent it to the author over there, and they were sitting on my desk about 5 days ago. So I sent it to the chair of the Transportation Committee over there, and I'm hoping that it will soon be done. Yeah, I know.
Well, Senator Neville, why don't we do this? Why don't we...
Mr. Chair.
Senator Salzman.
You know, we had the online driver's ed, and I was very much against that because of safety issues, and so I really, really support this. But I think with Senator Bonoff, having a daughter as well, driving at night, there's a sense of security that I'd almost feel better with one person in the car, not two. But I think that it might gain better support if we could just maybe consider one person, because I think that that is an issue, especially when you live, if you're not in a city, but you're out where I live, where you have kids driving on roads at night. Sometimes I think they get nervous trying to figure out where to turn, and they, you know, that's something that probably happens.
Mr. Chair.
So I would be comfortable with that,
Mr.
but
Chairman?
No more than one.
All right. Senator Neville, council has an amendment to
address this issue.
Kind of address the wishes of the committee. Ms. Bierzowski.
Line 1.22, after the second A, where it says carrying A, delete the second A and insert more than one.
Line 22, not operating a motor vehicle carrying more than one passenger under the age of 20.
I'll move the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Senator Koch moves that amendment. Further discussion? Senator Dibble.
I'm curious how Senator Neville feels. The only reason I ask is Senator Neville's approach isn't even as restrictive as some states I'm familiar with. Both my brothers graduated from high school in New Jersey. They couldn't drive a car for the first 6 or 12 months, mm-hmm. I can't remember which, unless they were in the company of a responsible adult relative, which I actually had the pleasure of being that responsible adult relative when my little brother got pulled over once in New Jersey. Luckily, he didn't get a ticket. He got off with a warning, because there's a pretty tremendous sanction, actually, if he had gotten a ticket. Then I think he had serious restrictions until he was 18. So I'm just curious how you feel about this change.
Mr. Chair, if it were up to me, I'd keep it like it is. Mm-hmm. But if the committee, mm-hmm. your expertise on this issue is better than mine.
Mm-hmm. Well, committee members, like I said earlier, we've done things with provisional license and younger drivers. I think what Senator Neville is doing here is, and listening to some of the comments on the committee, maybe a little too far of a step, and maybe halfway approach this year, and it's this incremental process towards building a provisional driver's license or a provisional program that works. And sometimes we have to warm people up to the idea that we're putting these restrictions on our younger drivers. So, Senator Koch, did you move that amendment?
Yes, I did, Mr. Chair. I'll move that amendment.
All right, Senator Jungbauer.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I'd actually speak against the amendment. You know, if you've been driving the kids around that long, it's a great parent and child bonding time if they can't drive at night alone. You only got to put up with it for another 6 months. So I think what Senator Neville has here, especially, as he deals with the options to answer all the questions about driving to sport events, to school events, and stuff like that, it's pretty much all covered here. If you've been driving them that long to events, you can put up with another 6 months and have a bonding time of parent and child, and it'll actually help even better because you can direct the kids then and have great teaching times with them instead of letting another child in the car with them. So I'm against the amendment.
All right, further discussion on the amendment. On the Koch motion to amend, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Chair's got good ears. That sounds like it did not prevail.
Division.
All right, thank you. All in favor, raise your hands. Opposed? The motion fails 8-5.
Wow. Oh, bang your devil.
No, I think you missed.
No, I'm sorry. The motion prevails 8-5. Motion prevails 8-5. Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, Senator Neville, I wasn't around last year, but I believe this was on the House floor last year. It got beat up pretty bad. Can you give me some insight as to why that was?
No. Mr. Chair, I don't have any knowledge of that at all. Mr. Chair, if you ask that question on the floor, if this gets to the floor, I will consult with the House, with the other body's authorities, and find out what happened.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Two on the floor.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
To that question, I don't actually know if a question like that is very informative or instructive, frankly, for a Senate hearing. I mean, what goes on the House floor is often an exercise in
futility,
great amusement. And
all right, this bill needs to move along here. So Senator Koch moves that Senate File 1605 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor and as amended. And Senator Neville, we're also going to put this one in our omnibus transportation bill, or we're gonna keep a copy of it around for possible inclusion.
That's great.
Okay.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
On the Koch motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. I heard better that time. So
that's the best.
Okay,
one.
Thank you, Senator Neville. Next up, we've got two of Senator Rest's bills, Senate File 2126 and Senate File 1161. And for anybody that's hanging out, we've got Senator Saxog's bill is going to be last on the agenda. Sorry about that, Senator Saxog, but I think there's some amendments brewing that need time to be printed and all that. So, Senator Rest, Senate File 2126.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I do have a delete all amendment that I also wish to modify.
All right. Senator Rest, can you explain the delete all amendment while we're having it passed out here?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, but it is an author's amendment.
Pardon?
It is an author's amendment.
Author's amendment.
To get the bill in the shape that I'd like us to consider it.
I'm sorry. On the A1 amendment, all in favor say
but
aye.
I do want to
aye.
I want to modify it before we take it up.
Okay. State the modifications.
And the modifications would be to, under subdivision 3, to delete paragraph 2, which would be lines 24 through 26, and then to delete section 2.
Delete section what?
Section 2 of the delete all.
What, section 2 of the
Senator Rest, one more time.
Of the delete all amendment, to delete paragraph 2 under subdivision 3, which would mean that you would also, on line 121, delete the colon, and on line 22, to delete a paragraph number, since there will only be one paragraph.
Okay. Senator Rest, are you just on line 124?
I'm sorry. I take that back. It would be a paragraph 1, and
right.
Then on line
and renumber.
122, line 27 would be renumbering to make that paragraph.
You're just taking a second paragraph
I'm just taking out.
Out
lines 24 through 26, renumbering the paragraphs and whatever the other technical amendments would be necessary, and then to delete section 2, which is lines 129 through 132.
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
All right. Senator Olson?
You need to leave the and that's on 126 to link the one in the...
I believe that the council can make the technical corrections to affect the substantive change.
Right. We'll make sure that Ms. Berzovsky sees this copy that I've written here. On the rest motion to amend, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 2126 is a proposal to set up a congestion reduction task force to operate in an advisory capacity to the Department of Transportation and the Metropolitan Council as they move forward to meet an April 30th deadline with regard to making a proposal to the Federal Department of Transportation for the Federal Department's Urban Partnership Agreement. This is a program of federal funds growing almost every day, but apparently close to $1 billion that are going to be available to metropolitan areas that come up with plans and programs for a corridor project for reduction of congestion. Each proposal that goes forward to the federal government has to have four components. One of those is congestion pricing, like it occurs currently along the 394 Men Pass program. Secondly, it has to have a mass transit component. Thirdly, the application has to have a telecommuting component. And fourth, there has to be a technology component too that will improve as you see in the handout on this program, to improve the network performance, improving incident response, and improving signal timing. I would just direct your attention to the one sheet proposal. Senator Murphy and I did attend a White House conference at a couple of months ago now that talked about this particular program that was coming up. There was also a visit to the Twin Cities area by Deputy Commissioner Duval, who spoke at a Citizens League group and then was due to speak before the Transportation Committee, but because his remarks had not been vetted by the department, he was not permitted to do that. But he was able to meet with, on an informal basis, with almost whoever was around, and that included Senator Murphy, Senator Bonhoff, myself, and we ran into Senator Olson in the hallway, and she came and was part of that general conversation as well. Since that time, and that was sponsored by the Citizens League, since that time, there's been ongoing discussions among stakeholder groups, particularly in the public sector. And a couple of weeks ago, there was a seminar of stakeholders held at the University of Minnesota that I also participated in that further discussed recommendations that they would make to the Met Council and the Department of Transportation about possible corridors and possible ways in which to initiate any one of these four elements that would make a good proposal. One of the things that I found the most interesting had to do with transit. We all know that transit is, just like roads, is subsidized, but one of the suggestions was one way in which to get people interested in transit was to do kind of a reversal on the pricing, that during the peak hours is the time in which you want to make transit pricing least expensive, so that you would get more riders. And I thought that was a very innovative suggestion. In some areas, I guess, if transit programs or mass transit is oversubscribed, you pay a premium to ride during the peak hours. Like, for example, in Washington, D.C., when you're trying to encourage and incentivize transit use, however, it seems to me to be a really clever approach to offer a lower price for quality transit at peak hours. So that's just one of the ideas that was floated around, and people are really trying to think out of the box as they are approaching the federal government for the Minneapolis-St. Paul metropolitan area to be in line to receive one of these federal grants. And so that's what the proposal is to have a task force that can be a group of stakeholders to get the legislature involved as well as the governor involved directly with giving those, being a funnel for those suggestions to the Department of Transportation and Met Council. And again, the application first deadline is April 30th, and the department has been working in the last month to 6 weeks to come up with a proposal. And as that process goes along, we want a much wider group of people involved in it. And so that's why this would be the vehicle to have that broader participation, and also to continue through the assuming that we could get one of the grants, continuing through that process. And I have with me Mr. Bob DeBoer, who's a senior policy advisor at the Citizens League.
Hi, I'm Bob DeBoer, Director of Policy Development at the Citizens League. I would just could add a couple things. Senator Rest really covered it quite well. The money that's currently on the table is $1.1 billion, and $700 million of that is transit funding. And that has risen quite a bit since the February 1st road pricing summit that we held. At that point, there was only $125 million available in the current fiscal year, with a promise of another $175 in the President's request for FY08. So the USDOT is clearly making a big effort to pull money together on the table. And it is a competitive process here. That's the key thing. April 30th is just the initial application. Then there are other deadlines throughout the summer and into the fall. And that's where this task force could be very helpful in really providing political support and political leadership to get an aggressive proposal from Minnesota on the table. It really is a case where the federal government is looking for a demonstration project. So they're not looking to just spread little bits of money all over the place. They'd really like to have it have an impact. And that's going to depend on how aggressive of a proposal we can come up with. I think some of the things that help us get a foot in the door is that we found out when Tyler Duvall was here, Deputy Commissioner, that MinPass is considered a national model. If you look in the Federal Register where this was written up, all they wrote up was San Diego and Minneapolis. So it was kind of surprising that they did that. And I think it makes us realize that we do have a well-functioning option here. I also want to make a distinction that congestion pricing is not tolling. And the reason is because the only way you can raise the price with congestion pricing is if congestion increases. And it is not tied to whether or not you need to pay for the road in a certain way, which a lot of tolling in other states is. They set a level they're going to toll you because they want to pay for that road, and they toll the whole road night and day. Congestion pricing is not that, and I probably don't need to speak to this body about that as much as the House, but that's a very important distinction that I think everyone needs to understand. It's a great market tool because only an increase in congestion can raise that price. It's all to create a free flow in the lane you're pricing, which means it's also an incredible benefit for transit because that guarantees efficient throughput of your transit systems, and people can know when they get on transit that they're going to get there at the appointed time if they have a priced lane like we do on 394. Other than that, I think I'd just say that our stakeholders workshop on March 16th, and this is a partnership with the Humphrey Institute and the Center for Transportation Studies, we had a number of local government officials. We had county commissioners from Dakota County, Scott County, Hennepin County. We had council members from Richfield, Plymouth, Bloomington, and Minneapolis, and the mayor of Dayton was also there. So we are also trying to build local support and understanding that the federal government probably doesn't view this as just a technical issue. You know, they want to see something done in the short term and are going to look for broad political support for this before they're granting money. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? This bill does need to go to state and local government operations.
That's correct.
Right. Senator Rest, do you want to make that motion?
Yes. Then I would move, Mr. Chairman, that Senate File 2126, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations and Oversight.
On the Rest motion, all in favor? Is there anybody that wants to speak in opposition? On the Rest motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. DeBoer.
Mr. Chairman, then I have Senate File 1161.
On 1161.
Mr. Chairman, this is an agency. This is an agency bill that has to do with highway contracts. As you see, regulation provisions. Right now, highway contracts have to, when they do the bidding on them, they have to be read aloud, and they do this process in the cafeteria at the Department of Transportation. And what the proposal essentially is doing is bringing the bidding process in that regard into the 21st century and technology, and ask that these bids be not read aloud nor need to be published in a newspaper, but instead be available on the internet. This will be a tremendous savings. It is readily available to the users, and we are trying to be serving efficiency with this bill, and we have Eric Rudine here to give testimony from the department about how this is going to improve the bidding process for all the stakeholders.
Mr. Rudine, how much money do you think we're going to save by doing it electronically?
Mr. Chair, and I have a couple handouts as well. We're estimating that we'll save approximately $40,000 per year on the advertising, and approximately $20,000 per year by requiring that all bids be submitted electronically, because if it's a paper copy, it has to be typed in by somebody. We also had a recent bid, and this is not uncommon, where we had to throw out 9 bids in one letting because of mistakes. So we're hoping that by requiring them to be submitted electronically, we'll have fewer mistakes, because it actually won't allow you to submit a bid until it knows, the computer knows, you have all the fields filled out correctly and that you've done your math correctly and so forth. And then on the public reading of bids, we don't really have an estimate on that one, but it does take several staff people about a half their day to set up the bid reading in the cafeteria and then to tear down after the reading has been accomplished.
And Mr. Chairman, this would apply to all bids, too. We were in the line 20 of the bill. It's not just a $5 million or over would be on the internet, but all bills. So it would be all bids. So it would be completely converting the system to an electronic one.
And maybe Mr. Rudine. Mr. Rudine, why did we take the $5 million cap out of that?
Mr. Chairman, that $5 million was put in a few years ago, and it's been working very well for us. And what we're proposing, and this is not in the law, but we would phase in so that starting on July 1st of 07, all contracts of $1 million and over would be submitted electronically. July 1st of 08, all contracts over $500,000. And then on July 1st of 09, all contracts. And we've actually checked with AGC and the other contractors, the DBE community as well, and we haven't heard any objection from anyone to moving this direction. basically people have told us to be in business today, even if you're a small sort of mom-and-pop operation that is just, you know, doing landscaping work or that type of thing, that these folks have computers and they're on the mm-hmm. internet, and it's not a problem for them to be doing this.
All right. Is there anybody here to speak in opposition to the bill? Seeing none, Senator Rest, you want to make the motion?
Yes. I would move that Senate File 1161 be recommended to pass.
Senator Rest has moved that Senate File 1161 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. And Senator Rest, we're also going to hang on to the language here for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, too.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right, thank you. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you,
you,
Senator Rest. Next up, let's see. He's not here. Senator Olsen, you've got. Senator Olsen, let's start with your school bus bill, if possible.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple witnesses to testify with me. Dave Peterson from the metropolitan area. What's your final abbreviation there?
My name is Dave Peterson. I'm a communications officer of the Minnesota Association of Troop of Transportation.
Mr. Chair, members, this is pretty much a technical bill aligning with national standards. They actually mailed me all the standards related to this, and I read it. I found it pretty exciting, actually, but that's my problem. So I will turn it over to Dave.
Mr. Lindell, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Murphy. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell with the Minnesota Association of Pupil Transportation. The provisions that are in Senate File 647 actually kind of fell through the cracks last year at the end of the legislative session. This was approved. It was part of the Senate's K-12 omnibus bill. Many of these provisions were in it. At the very end, there was no conference committee that put together a K-12 omnibus bill, and this was not in what was the final amendment that was passed with the education provisions included in them. I don't think that that's an indication of any kind of problems with these provisions, but more of the process or lack thereof that was part of the end of the 2006 legislative session. Mr. Peterson will go through the provisions. I should just mention that this bill should probably, it's in the House K-12 Conference Committee, this language. It probably needs to go back to Senator Wigger's committee if in the event that he puts together an Education Policy Conference Committee, conference bill.
We'll let Senator Olsen and Senator Wigger figure that out. Mr. Lundin, it's my understanding, though, and I think I just heard you say this again, that this is what we've done this before, but it just hasn't become law, and that there's nobody in opposition to this.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
All right. All right,
and also the Captain Urquhart is here from DPS. If you have any questions about DPS's. Positions on these.
Let's do this before we lose any more committee members. Is there anybody in opposition to the Olsen bill? Seeing none, Senator Olsen moves that Senate File 647 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. Senator Olsen, this would be a candidate for possible inclusion. So when we start putting our bill together, make sure that you have a copy of this language when we put our big bill together. But in the meantime, we're going to send this on its merry way.
And that was my exact motion. Thank you.
All right. Great. All in favor of the Olsen motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you. Senator Olsen, let's take up your next bill. It's my understanding that you've got the controversy worked out of this.
Yes, I need to. I would like to do a author's amendment.
Okay.
I have two changes that I would like to make. The first change would be on 2.18. And at the new language thereafter, on all paved, cross out county state aid and add 9-ton routes. With a comma, and then cross out on 2.19, highways and paved county roads.
Could you repeat that, please?
That would be my first change, Mr. Chair.
All right, you want to repeat that one more time? I've got it, but I'm going to make sure that Senator Scoy and Council have it.
Okay, then the sentence should read, on 2.18, on all paved 9-ton routes, and that would be it. And on all routes designated under Section 169.
Okay, you want to state your next one then?
Yes, and that goes under the seasonal restrictions. It would be 3.10. It would be striking all that new language down to 3.12.
Striking all that.
So we delete Section
3? So
okay. Mr. Chairman, I'm not following.
So, Senator Olsen, we're just going to delete Section 3.
Let's see.
If you're taking the new language out that's in there, it's
okay.
It's a lot easier just to delete Section 3. That doesn't mean we're deleting it from law. We're just taking it out of this bill.
Yeah, right. That sounds good.
Okay. On the Olsen motion to amend, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Olsen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have Carol Lovell from AMC here to address the bill, and I'll turn it over to Carol.
Ms. Loverell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name's Carol Loverell with the Association of Minnesota Counties. And this bill was a result of the weight limit interim study that was facilitated by MnDOT, which led us to form an AMC weight limit task force. And out of that came these four issues. We're disappointed that the bill, the Section 3, was deleted. We had hoped to extend gravel roads for 2 weeks longer in the spring. MnDOT has done research on that particular issue, and those gravel roads need 2 weeks longer in the spring to recover than paved roads. And for farmers, you would think they would want to support this because there's a lot of other heavy truck traffic on local roads that do damage other than the agricultural haulers. So we were a little disappointed that that had to happen. And hope to work on that before session is over. We did decide to accommodate the haulers and declare all county paved and county paid state highways 10-ton unless posted. That makes for a little more seamless system for haulers to know what roads they're on. It's hard for them to know whether they're on a trunk highway, a county road, a county state aid highway.
Yeah.
So unless they're posted, the paved roads would be declared 10-ton. And then we also wanted to make it legal for haulers on 80,000 pounds on our 9-ton roads. So we removed the 73,280-pound restriction. And in turn, we're getting rid of the 3-mile limit that was passed into statute and go back to the federal 1-mile access for haulers from a 10-ton trunk highway onto a county 9-ton road.
Mr. Chair, that's kind of the crux of the bill. So could this go directly to the floor, or would you like this on?
Well, Senator Olsen, we'll probably dual track it. Is there is there any other discussion on the bill? Mr. Schoenfeld, you've seen this. Well, can we?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Jerry Schoenfeld, who works with a number of farm communities and pork producers and soy growers and others. We have also been authorized to speak with farm group groups, several other farm groups, and just we appreciate the section you just gave us.
Okay, so we're all singing Kumbaya for the time being. All right. Good work, Senator Olsen. Senator Olsen, you move that Senate File 1097, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor, and this is also going to be possible inclusion.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right. Any further discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks. Sorry, I'm kind of bouncing between here and environment, so if I miss the discussion, just tell me later. But why did we take out Section 3? I mean, it's no small matter. You know, we pay a lot of money to repair roads all over the state when they get
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, one of the concerns is that many of the township roads are right where the farmers are farming, and there's concern about they've been itching to get commodities to market and fertilizers to the field, and that, you know, taking it at a 5-ton limit, you know, they're taking a partial load. And so one of their big concerns is that they'd be able to get their crops in, and getting the commodities to do that is probably the biggest factor.
Well,
Senator Dibble?
I understand that, but, you know, it creates a lot of pressure on our state resources. Are we going to continue to talk about this, talk about the partial loads, or talk about some ways so we're not inflicting maximum damage on these soft roads in the springtime?
Mr. Schoenfeld?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble. Mm-hmm. First of all, in terms of township roads, most of those roads do have local property. There is some state, most of them have local property taxes. Those local property taxes are the people who live in the roads. And in addition to that, we have a number of situations where there are livestock operations that simply cannot afford not to use those roads. In many cases, they voluntarily offer to the township to pay for additional gravel in order to be able to.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks. Well, you know, I don't have township, but, you know, I do have a statewide perspective as one Minnesota, Mr. Chair, so I get worried about these roads out there. So.
Well, thank you.
All right.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Olsen, doesn't current law allow the townships to actually post the roads individually longer if necessary?
This, Mr. Chair and Senator Jungbauer, that's kind of going to be the default here, because this was going to be kind of a blanket posting, but now there will have to be, the roads would have to be marked under, so it can still be marked.
Mm-hmm. Senator Jungbauer.
Well, so Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, that kind of answers your question. If it is a road that is of concern, the local township can actually is authorized to post it. So. Mm-hmm.
All right. Excellent.
On the Olsen motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Olsen. Is Senator Gimsey around any place?
He's presenting a bill up in environment right now.
Okay, we'll move along down the list then. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, members, I am carrying a bill for the department with regard to towing, and before I let Mr. Rudin speak about that, I'd like to offer two amendments. The first one is the A07-1066 amendment. So I move AO7-1066. And I will let Mr. Rudin speak about that.
Okay, let's adopt this amendment first, since this is your bill, and you need to get this. All right. On the Bonhoff motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion does prevail. Mr. Rudin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just walk through the bill real quickly. Much of the bill is conforming state statute to federal regulations. Yep. Oh, on the amendment first, sure. The amendment that we just adopted was it changes the definition of freeway and expressway, and these are just some technical definitions. And then the flashing yellow arrow is something that we installed down on Highway 110, and I believe it was 149 in the Mendota Heights area. And it's something that we're kind of experimenting with, but it's been working well for us, and we think that other units of government would like to do this as well, and it's something we might like to do in other places. But it instead of giving you a steady yellow, it allows you to turn left on a flashing yellow. But we had to update state statutes so that people understand that is no longer a protected movement, because currently if you take a left turn on a steady yellow, you know there's not oncoming traffic. You're making a protected turn there, so we had to just update state statute.
Okay. Senator Bonhoff, did you say you had another amendment?
I do,
okay.
Mr. Chair. At this time, I am offering the AO7-0138 amendment.
All right. On that amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion does prevail.
And, Mr. Chair, this amendment would allow MnDOT to implement a new federal program for registering interstate motor carriers. And it's really just replacing the existing federal program. If you want to operate across state lines, you have to be registered under this federal program. And this will allow Minnesota companies to make that registration within the state rather than having to go to one of the several other states that have implemented this program. And although Congress has implemented these regulations, all the details haven't necessarily been worked out yet, so this amendment is just authorization language for the department to work to implement the new program once it is fully approved, which we expect to happen later this spring or early summer.
Okay. Let's. Why don't you walk us through the bill then?
Sure, Mr. Chair. The first section deals with the towing authority for the Department of Transportation. That's actually found in sections 1, 4, and 5 of the bill. And this would just allow what we formerly called our highway helpers and are currently referred to as our first responders to call to order a tow truck. They would not be actually performing the tow, but we would follow state patrol's procedures. And actually the way we envision it working is that we would have our first responders call the State Patrol dispatch desk, and then they would follow their procedures for actually ordering the tow. But many times in the metro area, especially if there's a snow event or something like that, the State Patrol is just so overwhelmed they don't have the personnel to be out there towing vehicles. And so this is something we've talked about the patrol with. They're supportive. It's limited to our metro district at this point in time. Sections 2, 3, 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 of the bill are some federal conformity issues on motor carriers, definition of explosives and flammable liquid. Also, that's in sections 2 and 3. Section 6, the displaying of an address on a motor carrier vehicle that formerly was required under federal regulations, that's no longer required, so we're just updating state statute. If a company wants to still display their address, they're welcome to do that, but there's no longer a requirement that they do so. Hazardous material safety permits, which is in Section 7, is again a federal conformity issue. It will clarify MnDOT's authority and be consistent with our adoption of other federal motor carrier safety regulations in Chapter 221. Section 8 of the bill deals with something that was enacted last session, allowing drivers over the age of 18 to transport hazardous materials of trade. And this is just going to clarify that that only applies when they're engaged in intrastate transportation, so in other words, within the state. And then Section 9 is just kind of a cross-reference to allow MnDOT access to certain hazardous material safety permit records that we're creating in Section 7 of the bill. So that's the bill, Mr. Chairman, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer those.
Is there anybody here in opposition to the bill?
But I have one question.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair.
Sorry.
I'm familiar with the 7-county metropolitan district. What is the eight? What's the 8th county? I'm just
Mr. Chair, it's for MnDOT's purposes, Chisago County is also part of the metropolitan.
You throw us a bone.
Thank you.
Is there anybody here in opposition to the bill? Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. If Mr. Rudin could re-explain, because I'm just not grasping at the yellow signal item. What is the change? What are we doing?
Mr. Chair, currently under state law, if you are making a left turn at a yellow arrow, you can know that there is no oncoming traffic. So in other words, it's a protected movement. Mm-hmm. What we've done at highways 149 and 110 is installed a flashing yellow arrow. Mm-hmm. So that if there's no oncoming traffic, the motorist can make a judgment as to whether or not it's safe to turn. But then the motorist needs to understand that, in fact, there is traffic oncoming, so they're making a non-protected turn. And it's something that other states have started doing. It's allowed under federal regulations. This is the first application we have in Minnesota. And we're anticipating that in certain situations, it may be appropriate to do that, and some cities and counties may look at doing this type of technology as well.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Rudin, could you please address with the committee how the drivers will know that it's now unprotected?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, that's something that we as road authorities, I think, will have to work to educate people. And I haven't actually seen the one in operation, but my understanding is there is some sort of sign posted there. And we've had it going up now for a few months, and we're kind of studying it, and people seem to understand what's going on there. It has good sight lines on 110 so that you can see if there's oncoming traffic, and we haven't had any accidents so far, but if that does become an issue, then we would probably reevaluate our use of these in Minnesota.
All right. Senator Dibble.
Sorry. I also noticed the expressway and freeway change. Did we go over that? What does that change?
Mr. Chair, that is we issued a commissioner's order related to ATVs on freeways around the first of the year, and when we were doing that order, we discovered that the statutes hadn't been updated since probably the 50s or 60s, and so it's really just bringing state law into conformity with what our definitions have been and what our traffic manual definitions have for those roadways, but state law hadn't been updated for many years.
So we're just making the law run parallel to what MnDOT's been doing.
Right.
So, Senator Bonoff, you have a motion?
I move that we pass Senate file number 1062 as amended. And Mr. Chair, would you like it to go to the Senate floor or to be included in the omnibus?
Senator Bonoff, the motion would be to send it to the full Senate. And we will...
So moved.
Okay, and we'll make sure that there's an allowance. Just bring your language when we put the bill together, and we'll throw them all in. Okay. On the Bonoff motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Bonoff, do you have another bill?
No.
Well, we're running out of authors here, so I guess I... Pardon? Okay, I've got a load of bills here that we'll knock down in a hurry before he gets here. How's that?
Oh.
Senator Murphy, Senate File 1971, I believe.
All right. Mr. Chairman and members, 1971 changes a few of the statutes in regards to in regards to a driver's license and where the person has to designate their address. And Ms. Fraser is here to explain in more detail, but members, basically what's going on is that we're offering, especially people who have some sort of protective order out there, we're trying to make sure that their address that is available to the public is one in which they might be able to use a post office box or somebody else's address because of these orders for protection, so that their address isn't floating around out there. So whoever it is that they have this order, so they don't know where they're at, basically.
Mrs. Fraser.
This bill basically just provides a cross-reference to Chapter 5B, which was a chapter added to the statute last year by the legislature, creating a safe-at-home program, which is similar to programs in about 23 other states. It's an address confidentiality program, primarily for survivors of domestic violence, people who are literally in life or death situations who need not to have anyone know where they live. And so, basically, the Secretary of State's office will serve as a place where all of their mail would be sent. Everyone else in the world basically would have this one address that we give to them, and then we would forward all of their mail to them. We have worked with the Department of Public Safety. They're applying with this language. This allows the participants to put their designated address, which will almost certainly be a post office box, on their driver's license application, and for the GPS to put it on their driver's license or state ID card. The information would be available to law enforcement with a court order or if necessary. But for the most part, there would be only a couple staff in our office who know where they are. In other states, they have recommended, put the office in a separate undisclosed location because some of the staff have actually been stalked by some of the people trying to find participants. So, I mean, these people are really in a life or death situation, and we're very excited to be able to provide this service starting September 1st.
Thank you. Senator Olsen.
Where's the fiscal go on this? Is it in state government or?
Ms. Fraser.
That's real gas.
Any other? Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair and Senator Murphy, thank you for bringing this forward. I'm working on some other legislation with regard to no contact orders this session, and so this I've been pretty close to all session, and this is a very good measure. Thank you.
Any other questions? Anyone in the audience who would like to testify in opposition to Senate File 1971? Do you have a motion, Senator Murphy?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that Senate File 1971 be recommended to pass and refer to the Senate floor. And same thing, we're going to put this in the omnibus bill, too.
Okay, Senator Murphy moves Senate File 1971 be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Amendment or bill's passed. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, my the next bill that I have here, and I'm also going to present one for Senator Larson, too, because he had a family obligation he had to run off to. But this is Senate File 2047. And members, looking around, I don't think anybody's in opposition to this, but you never know. Mr. Chairman and members, this just amends the definition of a recreational vehicle combination. in current statute, we normally say the middle vehicle was camper/semi-trailer. And what we're doing here is we're eliminating that and just putting what it really is a middle vehicle. These are normally a fifth wheel coupling onto it's normally a motorhome, or not a motorhome. It's normally a camper, and on the back end of the camper is a boat. But there are some instances, as rare as they are, where it is not a camper. And so you'll have this fifth wheel combination plus a boat on the back. And members, this is kind of like what we were doing the other day, about the length of that middle vehicle. This piggybacks on this, on that, and just eliminates that old reference of camper and puts in middle vehicle. I don't know of anybody that's in opposition. So,
Senator Murphy, could be a horse trailer or anything.
Could be a horse trailer.
Questions, members? Anyone in the audience want to testify in opposition to Senate File Number 2047? Seeing none, Senator Murphy, do you have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that Senate File 2047 be recommended, passed, and referred to the Senate floor.
And included in the omnibus language.
Possible
also.
Inclusion, yep.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those, same sign. Motion prevails. Bill's passed. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, there's also a Senate File 1845, and I told Senator Larson, even though my name is not on this bill, that I would present this to the committee. And members here, I don't know, it's been several weeks ago now, there was a ruling. A guy took a parking ticket to court, and some judge ruled that you can't ticket the vehicle, and that's contrary to everything that's been said in regards to ticketing vehicles. It's just it was a ruling that didn't make any sense at all. Senator Larson's bill, just says that you can ticket a parked vehicle, period. And it's stated very clear in law, and I don't believe that there's anybody in opposition to this bill other than that person that took his parking ticket to court.
Questions, members?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Got a great amendment for this bill.
Senator Murphy, if you would want to make a motion, this Senate File 1845 needs to go to the Judiciary Committee.
Right.
Senator Murphy moves that Senate File Number 1845 be recommended to pass and referred to the Judiciary Committee. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Bill's referred.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was my legislative agenda. I think we've got Mr. Carlson here, Senator Carlson.
Okay. Senator Carlson, Senate File 1797.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair and committee, we will be covering Senate File 1797 for special transportation services. And I have, this is a bill it'll address a number of issues which have come up in providing non-emergency medical transportation for medical assistance clients. These are the kinds of rides that people need to get to their doctor appointments or to dialysis treatments. And it provides special transportation vehicles display the MnDOT or Metropolitan Council contact information so passengers can submit their complaints. And it also calls for the Commissioner of Transportation to resolve the complaints and report to legislative chairs and the ranking minority members of the Senate, Senate and House Transportation Committees. With me today is Mr. Michael Widener, Executive Director of Minnesota Paratransit Providers Association. And with that, I'll ask Mr. Widener to.
Senator Carlson,
is there an amendment
here. It's the A1 amendment. Do you want to offer that?
I move that. I have A1. I'm sorry. Is it A1 or A2 amendment we have?
It's A2.
It's the A2 amendment.
Okay.
Move the A2 amendment.
Okay, on the A2 amendment to get the bill into the shape that Senator Carlson needs it, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. All right.
Thank you. And with that, I'll ask Mr. Wagner to explain the bill to you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Michael Widener. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Paratransit Providers Association. We are an association of special transportation providers, and we represent members throughout the state. This is basically a housekeeping bill requiring all providers of non-emergency medical transportation to be subject to DOT inspection and supervision. The bill arises out of reported problems by patients, hospitals, and nursing homes with certain unregulated companies that are providing non-emergency medical transportation. What has happened is up until a couple years ago, if you were going to provide non-emergency medical transportation, the DOT had requirements, rules, and driver requirements, vehicle requirements, and standards and background checks. Well, what has happened is the state of Minnesota has contracted with a broker from Missouri to provide medical transportation services. And now you no longer need, not all vehicles need to be under DOT supervision. Instead, if you contract with the broker, you can go ahead and provide services without any regulation. So this
is going to make those private contractors from Missouri play by our rules?
Yes, it is. That's the intent of it. And this bill is a product of discussions with DOT and also with the Metropolitan Council.
Is there anybody here to speak in opposition to the bill? Senator Carlson, you got a motion?
I move that Senate File 1797, as amended, be recommended and pass.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
All right, and that bill is going to the full Senate. On the Carlson motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you, Mr. Widener. Senator Carlson, you've got 1275.
Mr. Chair and members, I have Senate File 1275, the Highway Rest Operators and Vehicle Weights Modification.
And Senator Carlson, I believe you do have the Delete Everything Amendment.
Yes, I move the A1 Amendment.
Okay.
It's a delete
all. This is to get the bill into the shape that Senator Carlson wants it in. Adoption of the A1 Amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and committee, I also have an oral amendment. And this
and that
is an
would
oral
be where?
Amendment to the A1 amendment at line 1.20 after paved, delete county highways, including paved, and insert 9-ton routes. Then on line 1.21, delete line 1.21.
Okay.
So 1.2 will read paved 9-ton routes.
And this is for the same reason as the bill that we heard
Correct.
Earlier. Okay. All right. On that oral amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, the purpose of this legislation is to allow trucks to remain at public rest areas with designated truck parking for 10 hours. And this is to allow drivers the appropriate time off. And it also establishes a maximum gross vehicle weight for all county highways which are paved. In addition, the bill will create a 400-pound exemption, and this is for the cooling units that are on some trucks for heavy commercial vehicles equipped with the environmental idle reduction equipment, which is actually a cooling or heating unit. Finally, we'll be allowing a 24-hour federal hours of service restart for drivers of well drilling equipment. And tonight I have with me Jeremy Estenson, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Trucking Association, to speak to the bill.
Mr. Chair, Jeremy Estenson with the Minnesota Trucking Association. I believe Senator Carlson actually covered all of the provisions pretty well, and if there are further questions, I'd be happy to answer. I would just add that these provisions have been included in Representative Leader's policy bill, and thank you for your support.
Is there anybody who wants to speak in opposition to the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair, is this 80,000-pound provision the same as what was dealt with earlier today? I think it was in Senator Rolstein's bill, or is it exactly the same?
Right.
Thank you.
Senator Carlson, you have an motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 1275 as amended be recommended to pass.
All right, and possible inclusion in the omnibus bill as well. Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
All right, so we're right down to Senator Saxog, right down to where we wanted to be. Now, we've saved you the rest of the evening. How much more are you going to burn up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm up in 107 with that Environment and Natural Resources Committee talking about Eurasian milfoil, too, so a lot of hot topics tonight.
I can't help you on that Eurasian milfoil. We don't have jurisdiction. Otherwise, I'd say just pull it out.
How about phosphorus?
No, okay. Senator Saxog on Senate File 438.
Thanks. Thanks, Mr. Chair and members. The reason we are here in front of the Transportation Committee is because of Section 1 of this bill. And with me today is Wayne Brand of the Minnesota Timber Producers, Minnesota Forest Products Industries, to go over the Section 1 of the bill and answer any questions that you might have.
Ms. Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Wayne Brandt, Executive Vice President, Minnesota Timber Producers Association, Minnesota Forest Industries. Our members are loggers, truckers, sawmills, primary manufacturers of wood products, paper mills, OSB manufacturers, and allied businesses. The provision in this legislation that we're discussing tonight is something that the main body of was passed originally 3 years ago for hauling raw wood from the woods to the mills. We think that this law has worked very well. There are some 700 trucks that are permitted for this hauling wood in the state of Minnesota. The number of trips with the increased weight that's allowed have been reduced significantly for hauling those commodities. The reduction in trips reduces the wear on the roads. With the extra weight spread over an additional axle, the sixth axle, both MnDOT and USDOT studies have definitively shown that it reduces the wear on the roads. By spreading that weight, you actually have less damage because you have more axles. The legislation also, as you'll see, contains numerous restrictions on the uses. The additional weight could not be hauled on posted bridges, could not be hauled on posted roads, cannot be utilized during spring road restrictions, does require the sixth axle, requires that that sixth axle have brakes, requires a permit fee paid to MnDOT, and also precludes the use on the interstate highways. In the area of safety, and safety is a significant concern to us and I believe everyone, MnDOT commissioned a study, which I'm sure the committee has seen, from Cambridge Systematics, which looked at a number of different safety factors, rollover potentials, stopping distances, all of those things, found that this configuration is well within the acceptable safety tolerances, but I would let MnDOT speak to that. Our experience with the provision over the last 3 years and many of the trucks that we have that are hauling the raw wood to the mills are insured through one of our association insurance programs. We've seen absolutely no increase in accidents or rates with hauling the additional weight. the brakes on the safety area. When you've got the extra axle with brakes, you've got an increase in your excess braking capacity. And when you talk to actual drivers out on the road, which I have a number of times, they will tell you that they can feel, even carrying the extra 10,000 pounds, that they can feel the difference with the extra brakes of being able to stop more quickly. And that's obviously anecdotal, but is backed up, I believe, by the research. You know, this is the the session of the environment and carbon and global issues. Our analysis shows that this provision, combined with existing law, would reduce the amount of fuel burned for moving these products from the forest to the mill and from the mill to the destination would be reduced by some 15%. That would provide a concurrent reduction in the emissions from the trucks when the diesel fuel is burned of some 15% also. You'll see in the pictures that I passed around, we're not seeking bigger trucks, we're not seeking longer trucks, we're not seeking taller trucks, we're not seeking wider trucks. We're simply seeking to have the trucks in the configuration that we use be more fully utilized in hauling these products. We hope that you'll look at this favorably and give it due consideration. I had anticipated having with me today Mr. Bob Oswald, and Bob asked if I could just share briefly his statement, a few items from his statement, which he provided to the committee and the other body. Mr. Oswald is the labor co-chair of the Wood Fibers Joint Legislative Council. He was a vice president of the AFL-CIO for 12 years, serves as the labor representative on the Forest Resources Council, is a papermaker for over 33 years at the Cloquet Paper Mill and a member of Steelworkers Local 1163. He and his, as he states, today I'm here, he was going to be here representing my union brothers and sisters in support of this legislation. If passed, it will be an important step in improving the competitive position of the forest products industry in Minnesota, protecting jobs, protecting roads, et cetera, et cetera. So I won't belabor that anymore, but would be prepared to stand for any questions.
Senator Saxog, and Council, I don't know if I'm missing something, but the form of the bill that they have here is a first engrossment, and then I see a summary to a second engrossment. What am I missing? Ms. Berezovsky.
Madam Chair, it should be the second engrossment before the committee, and I just ran and printed off a couple of copies.
Madam, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so it is not. So we don't have the first engrossment. We really do have the second engrossment before this committee. Is that correct, right. Ms. Berezovsky?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. Are there questions for the witness or for Senator Saxhog?
Madam Chair.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you. I don't remember your name.
Wayne Brandt.
Mr. Brandt.
Okay. Mr. Brandt. On the picture you show with the logging truck with the
yes.
third axle, now that's a single axle, or it's not duals on there. So my understanding was that the third axle on the trailer would be a dual axle. So your point that you're actually spreading the weight out less with this than a conventional truck per average weight, I suppose that's true, but if those actually were tandems, you'd be spreading the weight out even more. And so I'm wondering if your proposal is to have single tags, or would they be tandem axle?
Mr.
Brandt.
Madam Chair, Senator Olsen, the legislation requires that the axles meet the existing with no changes to axle requirements in current law, and also have to conform with the requirements for tires. You do see some with singles. You do see some with doubles. And it, you know, kind of depends on what they're doing. But the weight is still spread across the additional axle, and that's where the road wear savings comes in.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Saxog, you had another company a couple weeks ago about just, was that Route 2 or Highway 2?
Senator Saxhaw.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Dole, that was the Blandon Commodity Corridor, and you're right, it was from Grand Rapids to the Port of Duluth.
Okay.
And that was changing existing legislation, and this is, for the most part, existing legislation also, but it's adding on a little, an addition.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Dahl,
is this limited to just one particular highway now again, like that the other company, or is this for just this industry? Then they can move anywhere in the state.
Senator Saxhaw,
Senator, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dahl, I think I'm going to ask Mr. Brandt to answer.
Mr. Brandt.
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, it would apply to the products that are listed, which are paper, lumber, or engineered wood products, oriented strand board. You would be able to haul them other than on the interstates on any routes that were not posted lower in the state. So I think the difference between Senators and UPM Blandon is a member of mine also. The difference between the two is UPM had a particular need to access the Port of Duluth, and the other manufacturers have a need to get to their markets also.
And Madam
Senator
Chair,
Dahl.
Thank you. My question then is on these. We've heard testimony or from folks that our bridges are in some serious need of repair. Is this going to affect those bridges, this increased
Mr.
weight?
Mr. Brandt.
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, we would not be able to haul on any bridges that were posted lower, and I would just note that my organizations have been supporting a fuel tax increase for several years. You know, we use the roads, and you know,
Senator
we understand.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I have an amendment to this. It's the 438A1 amendment. And
see if we can have the amendment distributed, Senator Skoy.
And Madam Chair, while that's being passed out, I'd like to inform the committee. This is Senate File 2183. Didn't get on our agenda for tonight, but all the folks are going to be here. This deals with the same issue. I talked to Senator Saxhaw, and he's agreeable to me offering this to Senate File 438 so that we can bring this forward. And with that, I would move the A1 amendment. And
Senator Skoy offers the A1 amendment. Senator Skoy, you want to explain it?
Madam Chair, Mr. Clavin is here, who's going to help me walk through this, but this does deal with the additional weights if long as the industry is adding axles. And I really would like to thank Ms. Beriskowski, who has put this together under short notice for me, but there is one change that has to be made to the amendment, and if she could help me with that.
Ms. Beriskowski.
Madam Chair, when I just did this, I was working off the first engrossment, not the second. So the pages and lines that I wrote in are incorrect and have to be corrected. And, of course, there are no line numbers here to refer to. But on the first page at the top, the motion is to amend Senate File 438-2. And it's instead of after 3.8, it's before 1.9.
Before, say it again.
Before 1.9.
Okay, so Senator Skoy modifies his A1 amendment.
There's more.
Senator Ress, there's more.
There's more.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
On page 4 at the bottom, where it says line 3.20, it should say line 1.20. And instead of line 3.21, it should say 1.21. And then on page 5, on the top, after 3.30, it should say after 2.5. And that's it.
Is that it?
Yes.
Senator Skoy modifies his amendment to reflect the changes that were just read by Ms. Beriskowski. Senator Skoy, or your witness?
Mr. Clavin, please, Madam Chair.
Mr. Clavin, if you identify yourself, please, for the record. Need your name first. Thank you.
I represent the Association of Wheat Growers, Barley Growers, all three of the sugar companies, the potato growers, the Arnold Company, and then so turkey growers, the Royal Ag Association, and the Minnesota
You're a busy person.
Also, for those of you interested in the opinion of the Minnesota Farm Bureau, they're in support of this. And for those of you interested in the opinion of the Minnesota Farmers Union, they're also in favor of this. This amendment, as Senator Schweitz said, takes Senate File 2183 and amends it onto this bill. It deals with the same issue covered by Mr. Brandt as it relates to.
Mr. Clayman, where is Senate File 2183 right now?
That has been introduced and in the possession of this committee.
Okay.
We brought it over. Are there questions for Mr. Clayman or Senator Skoy? Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this would be for Mr. Clayman. One of my biggest concerns is, you know, why don't we open up the whole state to 97,000? Because we're, and we're directing traffic, heavy traffic, to the roads least qualified for this traffic. I mean, if it were on the interstates, you know, that may be a better place for these trucks, but we're putting awful lot of big trucks on, but they can't go on the interstate. I mean, so that leaves state highways and county roads. And one of the things we're trying to do with a big transportation bill is fix these roads back up. I understand the argument about the weights, but also in this photo too, I mean, if you're running singles on the tag, you're not spreading the weight out. And still, 80,000 is a lot of weight. I mean, we could be like Michigan and put 30 axles on there and go to 150,000, but I don't think we want to do that as a state. So I guess what I'm saying is that I think we're maybe moving a little too fast on this stuff, and I'd almost like to see, you know, I think there's some DOT studies, but I'd like to see DOT studies and public safety and state patrol and all of those people involved in, you know, how heavy should we go as a state. I think we're kind of creeping into area that maybe we should step back and look at the whole picture and maybe say we raise more for the whole state.
Mr. Clayman. Is there, Senator
Chair?
Scoy, and then I'll ask if there's anyone else who wants to comment on the A1 amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair. Senator Scoy, when you're done, I'd like to have a DOT come up and make a few comments.
Okay, Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Olsen, just to be clear, we're not changing the size of the truck. I mean, we're just filling it in a little bit. And actually, I mean, it is a 12% reduction in the number of trips, so there's less trucks on the road at any given time. And so I think there's a significant safety gain from that.
Mm-hmm. Is there someone from the department or Mr. McAfee, did you want to comment on this, on Senator Scoy's amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Works for me.
I was recruited yesterday by AAA in Minneapolis to come in and make some comments on this. And as you probably know, AAA's issue is basically safety. Just a couple points I'd like to raise. There's a MnDOT study that admits that the trucks are less, these types of trucks are less safe. They're more likely to roll over. They take longer to stop, and they take longer to climb hills. Secondly, there's the issue of the intensity of bridge wear, which was raised earlier. Thirdly, these mega trucks, which, and this was mentioned earlier as well, are prohibited from interstates. So obviously what that means is they're going to be on state roads predominantly. Fourthly, according to a National Highway Safety Administration study, trucks traveling on state roads as opposed to interstates are 300 to 400% more dangerous than they would be if they were on the interstates. So in closing, I'd just like to mention there are a couple groups that are opposed to this particular concept. AAA for one, the Minnesota Trucking Association, the State Troopers Association, and the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. McAfee. Are there comments or
Madam Chair,
or,
I would just
a moment. Okay. For Mr. McAfee or for Senator Saxhawk. Senator Solson.
I have a question. The Scoy Amendment, if I may ask, just a clarification.
Pardon?
It's a clarification on the Scoy Amendment.
Certainly, go ahead.
There is a piece in here that it is limited just to agricultural products on page 4. Is that clear? Is that specific or is that Is that included? I'm trying to go back between the two.
Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair and Senator Saltzman, Senate File 2183 was just for agricultural products, and that's what I drafted the amendment to. If there's other provisions in law dealing with the wood products, I'm not addressing that at all. It's strictly for ag products.
Senator Saxog, did you want to comment?
I did. Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to say, as a comment, Mr. McAsee's comments, is that I think we do have to remember that we aren't asking to go down any different roads. It's all the same roads. A little different configuration, and, of course, we talked about that there'll be less trips. So it isn't like we're asking to go in some fast, fantastic new area. Consequently, I think this is a good bill.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions for Mr. McAsee? Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess back to my question, Senator Saxog, earlier about the bridges, and then I was told that we wouldn't be the trucks wouldn't go over bridges that weren't rated for this. But if we move our limits up to 98,000 pounds, are all bridges that they'd be driving on then rated that way? And is that in the areas you're looking at?
Senator Saxog or Senator Skoy?
Well, Madam Chair, I think I heard the testimony say that we would have to comply with whatever the current bridge postings are. They would, if you weren't allowed to go across the bridge, you couldn't cross it. And so it would be whatever the current bridge postings are.
Okay. Senator Youngbauer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Senator Skoy or Saxhog, bridges obviously are a big concern to me. But one of the other things that's a concern is the safety issues. And I know there's different ways of rating or engineering braking configurations. Typical stock truck today coming out of the factory has maybe a 4 to 9% excess braking capacity, and I've seen engineering where we can do it just by changing the brakes or the configuration up to as much as a 30% excess braking capacity, which really gets at the safety issue in stopping. Have you, either one of you, thought about including some of that language in the bill so that we could give everyone a bigger comfort factor in terms of what kind of axles we're putting on there to get that excess braking capacity?
The department, it looks like it's going to weigh in. Senator Murphy.
Well, oh, no, Madam Chairman, I have a question after Ms. Parker's done.
Ms. Parker.
Madam Chair, Senator Jungbauer, I didn't know this was
Ms.
coming
Parker,
up tonight.
You need to identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. I didn't know this was going to come up tonight, or I would have brought more information with me. MnDOT did do an extensive study last year with the assistance of a consultant, well, with the assistance of two consultants and the University of Michigan Transportation Research Institute, which is one of the, I think, world-renowned sources of information about trucks, their operational characteristics and their safety. And they have actually done field testing on all of the trucks that are described in this amendment. And in addition to the field testing that they've done, they've developed a computer model that you can plug different variables into, and they do an analysis. We hired the University of Michigan to do this kind of an analysis on the trucks that are described in this bill because some of the language from this bill is taken from a bill that MnDOT had last year that was based on the study that we had done the preceding year. We would not have proposed any of those truck configurations if we thought that they were unsafe in any way. These trucks are not any larger than anything on the road today. One of the things the University of Michigan specifically looked at were the axles and the brakes on these trucks. And axles are designed to support a certain amount of weight. They come with a manufacturer's weight rating for that axle. And it almost always exceeds that which is carried on the axle, and the same is true for the brakes. Axles on these trucks are made basically to support 20,000 pounds, and when you look at a truck with a tandem, it's limited to 34,000 pounds by Minnesota law. So right there you have 6,000 pounds of excess capacity. This amendment would require that every additional axle that's added also have brakes on it. And all of these trucks are subject to annual inspections by inspectors certified by the State Patrol. And in addition, they're subject to random inspections anytime they're operating on the road. I think you've heard us before speak of our concern about safety in many different respects. We would not, as an agency, endorse or support anything that we thought would endanger the public. We fully recognize that members of AAA, and which I happen to be one, and although I don't share their view on this, but I know that many people are very nervous around trucks of any size on the road. And that, I think, is a perception issue. If you look at the statistics for trucks operating in this country, since about 1980, you would see that the crash rate for trucks has gone like this, straight down, just like the crash rate for automobiles has. They are significantly safer on the road than they used to be. The restriction against their operation on the interstate system is a restriction that is several decades old, and through the last 12 to 18 years, every time the six-year federal highway reauthorization bill comes up, there is a discussion about whether that should be changed, and the trucking industry and the railroad industry have made an agreement in the past not to discuss it because it is so contentious. That agreement is off the table, and so this issue will be coming forward. The thing that MnDOT liked about its own truck weight proposal was that, unlike the proposals that come from the American Trucking Association in Washington, ours required adding an axle with brakes to some of these trucks at 90 and 97,000 pounds, which we thought provided safety to Minnesotans in a way that other truck proposals did not. So that's just, I know you don't want to listen all night to this, but there are many requirements in state law that continue to be applied to these trucks. There's a requirement that tires carry no more than 500 pounds per inch of tire width. That restriction continues to apply to these trucks described in the bill. And many of these trucks' sizes are operated in other states, and it is an economic benefit to the state, I think, to allow that to happen in Minnesota as well.
Senator Murphy?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I would like to hear from Mr. Gillespie. I think that he represents a lot of those people who are out there on the road trying to make sure that things are as safe as possible.
Mr. Gillespie, if you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bill Gillespie, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association. We represent 8,500 police officers in the state of Minnesota, including the troopers and the county deputies. In fact, it was the troopers who originally brought this issue to us and raised our consciousness as an association to this several years ago. I'm just going to speak to, I don't want to get into axles, and I think Senator Olsen has a good point. I mean, eventually it will be axles to get to 144,000 pounds. Our position is that this is a slippery slope, that in fact, increasing the weight of a vehicle increases the mass. And our concern is when two vehicles come together, and that mass is deadly. Fully one-third of the vehicles, according to a 2005 checkbook, were out of commercial vehicles, were out of compliance. Now, I don't know about you, but I know that there aren't any more troopers yet. Supposedly there are 40 more, but there's probably a lot more drivers and a lot more vehicles on the road, and I don't think those inspections I personally and my family drive on the road want to depend upon. As far as the public safety aspect of it, we only concern ourselves with that one instance, I mean that one moment in time when the truck meets the car, five-passenger vehicle. It isn't the truck driver, it isn't the truck that's the problem. It's you and me. We drive distracted, we drive talking on cell phones, we drive aggressively, we drive drunk, we do stupid things, and you're asking professional drivers, operating vehicles, to react to those things. When you make the trucks bigger, I don't care what they say, when you make the trucks heavier, I don't care what they say, it changes the footprint or the ability to stop that vehicle. It's a matter of bigger, larger, heavier commercial vehicle. I can see it in the faces of the folks that work in the industry. I understand it makes sense for that economically. And I can even borrow the argument that if you do fewer trips, that there is some safety measure in that. You have less opportunity for two vehicles to run together. There will still be plenty of opportunities to run together. And that is the concern of my members of the association, is that the lethality of those accidents increases. And you're running them on roads, correctly pointed out, where there are more uncontrolled intersections than any place else in Minnesota. And uncontrolled intersections are places where fatal accidents happen. And so I just urge you to think about where you're going with this, proposing this, because we're just on our way to a larger, heavier vehicle, and we oppose that.
Are there questions or comments from Mr. Gillespie? Senator Skoy.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Gillespie, you know, I just heard the testifiers earlier in the department say that that the braking is probably going to be improved. There's less weight per axle and the same amount of braking. So I think that the stopping power is going to be comparable. And, I mean, I don't know if the members even care about this, but, I drove truck for a number of years in my earlier time and pretty familiar with what's going on there. The other thing, you talk about the mass of a truck. And, you know, I know that my wife, when she's driving on a road, she's nervous about trucks. And it doesn't have anything to do with the weight that's in the truck. It's just that it's a lot bigger than the car. And so she's nervous about it. We're not changing the size of the truck at all. But the ratio here is, the change in the ratio, the difference of the weight of the car and the truck is, you know, it's 0.05 to 1, and if you change this law, it's going to go to 0.44 to 1. I don't think that that's going to make that much difference, and the size of the trucks are going to be the same, and I believe the stopping power of the truck would be better.
Senator Youngbauer? Mr. Gillespie?
Madam Chair, Senator, the mass that I'm speaking of is the mass of the vehicle itself. Ergonomically, a heavier truck will hit you just like somebody 250 pounds hits you. It's different than if somebody 200 pounds hits you. If you have the weight that changes the mass of the vehicle, it becomes a more lethal instrument at that point. This mass is sometimes confused as the pure size of something. That's not it. It's actually the weight over the speed that gives you the energy.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chairman, and that's why I asked Mr. Gillespie to come up here, was to talk more expertly than I can about this. And, I'm between a rock and a hard spot here, personally. I mean, as the chair of the committee, you're supposed to be trying to take care of our roads and bridges and transit systems in the state. I also represent an area that is heavy in agriculture, and they need to have a better method of getting their crop to market. But, my other life, I know a little bit about physics. And when you talk about the mass and that extra 10,000 pounds, and you take that, now we're talking about instead of 80, 90, and you take that times the speed, I mean, this is basic physics. If you hit something, regardless of the braking distance, if you hit something, it's still the speed and the weight that causes the destruction. And I just don't feel that it would be prudent at this time to move ahead with this. I understand and I've went over all the documentation with MnDOT in regards to their study, and Ms. Parker and I have had a lot of discussions about it, and I can understand both sides of the equation. But when it comes down to taking the speed times the weight, bad things happen, and it doesn't matter if you put 1,000 brakes on those machines. It wouldn't change that, because the accidents that Mr. Gillespie you're talking about, you don't have time to put your foot on the brake. And we've all been there before. We've all seen those crashes. And adding 10,000 pounds will do a lot of damage.
Senator Youngbauer, and then we have, this is not the first time this issue's been discussed. We're going to vote. Senator Youngbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, in direct contradiction probably to Senator Murphy, if you're talking the laws of physics, when you're talking ag products, you have to factor in center of gravity, because it's much easier to tip over a truck that has a light load that is off center of gravity, and you will typically see the lighter loads are the ones that go over on the freeway ramps as opposed to the ag products and stuff. The mass, it is much easier. Anybody that's ever driven a big truck knows it's much easier to stop that truck when it has a load on it, because you're putting the load on top of those axles, and it's much easier to stop it. When you have an empty truck, because of that high PSI of the tires, that truck will take a lot longer distance to stop. So when you're talking the footprint of the vehicle, the center of gravity, it all affects things, and you add another axle in a different configuration, it again makes it that much easier to stop, because you're spreading out the braking as opposed to having it on one end or the other.
Well, Madam Chairman.
Senator Murphy.
Madam Chairman, Senator Jungbauer, I'm not disputing the fact that if you add more brakes, you can stop the vehicle. I'm talking about those crashes that happen when you don't have time to step on the brake. 90,000 pounds has more kinetic energy and more latent, potential latent energy than one that weighs 80,000 pounds. That's just the physics of it. And, you know, that's kind of reactor 101 physics. 80,000 pounds, you know, if you get hit with that, the chances are you're probably going to get pretty messed up anyway. 90,000 pounds, you're adding 10,000 pounds to the equation. And we're talking about those accidents when people don't have time to jam the brakes down.
Senator Scoy, final comment, and then we're going to vote.
Well, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, and Senator Murphy, the one part of that component that you're not taking into account is the 12% less trucks. And whether when you're in a 4,000-pound car and you're going to get run into an 80,000-pound truck, your chances aren't very good. So you're better off having less trucks on the road, even if they are a little heavy, because the odds are in your favor of not having an accident with less trucks on the road.
Okay, we have the SCOI amendment to Senate File 438. All those in favor of the SCOI amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
No.
Aye. The amendment, the motion prevails. And the amendment is adopted. Senator Scoy.
Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File number 438, as amended, be recommended to pass and also laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Senator Scoy moves that.
Madam Chair, this bill needs to go to taxes. Senator Saxhog's bill needs to go to taxes. Oh.
Yes, that would.
Yes. Senator Scoy's motion is that Senate File 438, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you, Senator Saxhog. Senator Gimsey, you have... we've been waiting here all night, but you have Senate File 600. And then, members, just so you know, there's one bill after this. Members, this is nothing unusual. These changes to the trunk highway system are something that we do every year. We've got two of them here. Senator Gimsey.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the chairman said this is a routine bill. It's a department bill. What it entails are two pieces of highway that will be turned back to local jurisdictions. And I'll have Eric Rudin from the MnDOT explain the bill.
Mr. Chair, as you said, these are routine that we do every session. And this year they're both quite small. The one in Wilmer is only about a mile in length.
Mr. Rudin, please. We are dealing with House File 539, not the Senate file. Okay, Mr. Rudin.
And the one in Martin County is about 2 miles in length. I do have the resolutions from the Martin County Board and Wilmer City Council if you need to see those, but otherwise I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right, Senator Gimsey moves that House File 539 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Gimsey.
With your approval, could we have it go to the consent calendar?
I don't see why not. Well, wait a minute. No, we should put this on the general orders. You never know. There might be another one that we need to hook onto it.
And it is a House file.
And it is a House file, so we traditionally don't put those on consent calendar.
We need it on the floor.
Very good, yeah. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, the only thing I would say is that the city is waiting on this legislation, the city of Wilmer, for an economic development project. So if the
okay,
Senate
could Mr. Rudin and Senator Gimsey will talk to the majority leader and move this on as quickly as possible. All right?
Very good, Mr. Chairman.
We'll hopefully get her done here in the next few days or so. We'll make sure that he knows there's an urgency. All right. On the... Okay. On House File 539, Senator Gimsey has moved that it recommended to pass and re-refer to the Senate floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Members, the last issue of the day is we do have a House file here, and it's 448. We're going to put this in our I just want to briefly touch base on this. This is the automobile verification. The insurance verification, we eliminated that program last year. The year before, we had problems with it. Senator Sinjum even got a ticket because of this law, and so we're repealing the law, and the department is we repealed it last year, but evidently there was a couple things laying around that also needed to be jettisoned. So Senator Skoy would move that House File 448 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Senate floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Committee adjourned. Thank you very much.
Good job, Chair Murphy. That was pretty quick.
Thanks.
Wow. Pretty quick.
Remember
to stay home.